Last week we discussed, we basically said, we introduced Hilchos Nida in general, that Nida means the status a woman attains when she has blood that comes out of her uterus. And we discussed the fact that there's two times during the month that a woman is going to bleed. One is going to be if it's part of the cycle, and the other is mid-cycle. And we pointed out, it's important to stress again and again, it's nothing to do with time. Mid-cycle and cycle is not related to the fact that, oh, I'm expecting my period now, therefore it's my cycle. Or I'm not expecting it, therefore it's mid-cycle. When I use the word cycle and mid-cycle, I mean if the period has the normal feeling of the period, it's the normal amount of blood, the normal feelings that usually she associates with blood, or it seems to be an anomaly. It doesn't fit. But that anomaly could even be right before a period. For example, we'll talk about this again, Be'ez Hashem, in the right time. Often, biologically, a woman spots, she has a little bit of blood, slowly, she's going to bleed before her period actually starts. 3 days, 2 days, a day before her period. What's the status of those spotting, of those spots? That is not period. Even though, usually, although in the Gemara you get the impression periods are precise, periods are usually not precise. So it's very possible 3 days before a period is really the time her period is supposed to start this month. Nevertheless, until it becomes a full-blown period, that is not considered her period. It's not considered her cycle, which means all the leniencies we discussed last week, the fact that it has to be a certain size, it has to be on bed and have a kabbal tuma, that it has to be on something which is not colored, all those will apply even to spotting in the very beginning of her period. Alternatively, this is very important, we'll revisit this a little bit in a few minutes, if a woman is during the Zayin Nikim, during the 7 days we mentioned briefly that a woman is going to become Tahora, if she spots, is that considered cycle or mid-cycle? That's mid-cycle. Her period was just over. So once she establishes that she's clean, that her period stopped, even though in terms of time that was very close to her period, it's irrelevant. That's considered spotting, and it also has the same leniencies. Alternatively, let's say a woman is traveling to Eretz Yisrael, and often the airplane can make strange things happen, being in a strange country makes strange things happen. She came back from the mikveh a week ago, and in reality a period should not start yet, but she has a lot of blood. Even though it's not something she expects, she's still going to eat tamea. That's not period. That's considered cycle, even though it's not something which is based upon time, her cycle. That's what we discussed basically last week, the fact that there's a big difference between cycle and mid-cycle. The leniencies are very important to keep in mind. And what you don't know can't hurt you. A woman never has to be aware of what's going on, except for the certain times of the month that she has to check. She never has to be aware. I mean, she never has to check undergarments. What you don't know can't hurt you. So all those leniencies are things you're supposed to use. And we mentioned last week that the Ramah says women should wear bedazim sivonim. They should wear colored garments because you don't need to get involved in these issues. Just as an aside, sometimes women feel a little bit awkward. What do you mean? I'm ignoring the blood? I know there's blood coming out. I'm ignoring it. And halacha is, we mentioned last week, according to the Torah, when's the only time a woman is a nida? If she has a hardasha. She really feels the blood leave. So that means only when it's really part of the cycle. Any other time, even if this blood is red as a fire engine that's coming out of her, is she a nida according to the Torah? No. Meaning spotting, according to the Torah, is totally irrelevant. Which is why we allow her to ignore it, because according to the Torah, it doesn't even exist. It's not like she is somehow making a chaf. It's really Shabbos today, but I'm ignoring Shabbos. No, it's not a problem according to the Torah. So Chazal or Dozer that it's a problem, but those same Chazal said there are certain leniencies that apply. It's important to keep that in mind. There's nothing wrong with tricking during the times of the month that is not really a full-blown Nida period. And we ended last class with discussing the fact that even though there are leniencies as far as spotting, there are three things that turn what we would have called spotting into a real period. What are those things? Number one, if a woman does an internal examination, why is an internal examination going to cause a problem? Because we're concerned that if she has an internal examination, somehow she has a feeling. She feels something. If she puts, let's say, a cloth or a tampon in the vaginal canal, she feels it. Now, she feels what she thinks is the tampon. But in reality, we're concerned maybe what she really felt was that hardasha, the blood leaving her body and making her into a nida. And since we're not sure, we're always machmir. If a woman ever does an internal examination, she's considered temeya min haTorah. which is why people often get confused. A common shiloh people ask, if a woman finds a little bit of blood on a tampon, tiny bit of blood, you would think there's at least two reasons to be metal. Number one, a tampon is disposable. We mentioned last week that disposable things are considered enum atabal tumah. That's where Moshe Feinstein's psak. And number two, it's a tiny bit of blood. So you would think you can be metal for two reasons. Nevertheless, you may not. Since it was internal, we're always machmir that it might have come with haradasha. That's considered blood. That's part of the normal cycle. Similarly, if a woman does a bedika, this happened, I mentioned at the end of last week, this happened recently. Two tallis called up my wife, and they said, we did a bedika before our wedding, and there was only a little bit of blood. So even though it was red, we threw it out, because we know we didn't have to ask a shayla, there was only a little bit of blood. And that is wrong, 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 wrong. Why is it wrong? Because once it's an internal contamination, even a tiny bit of blood could be a problem. Now, it could be if they would have brought it to a rav, the rav would say that it's not really considered red. But as far as the requirement for bedika, that will the requirement, the leniency of not being nida, that will not happen there, even though it's a tiny bit, because it's internal contamination. Similarly, if a woman goes to the bathroom, if a woman urinates, Chazal were concerned that the feeling of urination might be confused with hardasha. And even though she thinks she's feeling just urination, in reality what she's feeling is the hardasha. And therefore the hardasha, the feeling of sensation of becoming a nida. And therefore if a woman spots, either at the same time or right after she goes to the bathroom, going to the bathroom here means urination. Usually we use the euphemism, going to the bathroom, but it's important to realize there's a difference between urination and going to the bathroom for a longer period of time. That would not be a problem. Only urination, because I was concerned that urination might cover up the hardasha, the feeling of being anida, and therefore, if a woman urinates and very close to that finds blood, that's a serious problem. She's going to be anida. What are the two solutions? So, number one, which is important, is don't look. The same idea, and it's very, very important to drill it into people's heads. What you don't know can't hurt you. It's strange, because people go through life looking. People are not concerned about looking in the bathroom. There's nothing to be specifically causing them not to look. And it's a hard change in a person's mind. From now on, don't look in the bathroom. But yes, do not look. And number two, which often is hard in today's day and age where everyone's always rushing, it's hard, but it's important to keep in mind the concept. The only time we say that blood is a problem when it comes with urination is if it comes right during or right after. What does it mean? So according to the Gemara talks about shir veses. Shir veses, we presume, is usually around 6 seconds. Only 6 seconds during, either during, which is the same, 0 seconds, or right after, 6 seconds after the urination. Once 6 seconds pass, then even if she bleeds, it's back to being a tesim. It's back to being something which is mid-cycle, has the leniencies of something. Toilet seat is not matabal tumma, and it's going to be mutter. So if she wants to look, she's welcome to wait, let's say, count to 10. Usually count to 10 takes around 6 seconds. And then look. And then anything she finds, we are not going to presume came before, and we'll presume just came now, and therefore she's not going to be a nida midaraisa in that situation either. So again, it's not a good thing to advise people only to count to 10, because often people rush. But the best thing to do is not to look. It's a problem that comes up in the bathrooms also, is sometimes, even if a woman already didn't look, often she'll find some blood on toilet paper. We mentioned we're usually very makeable with toilet paper. Toilet paper is not matabal tumah, there's nothing to talk about. But it depends. If a woman somehow puts toilet paper in deeply, you have to make sure it's not the internal examination. It's just important to be wary of. The third situation in which there's a problem of not being able to use the leniencies we mentioned last week, the leniencies of chesamim, is during or after sexual intercourse. There's two reasons to that's a problem. Often sexual intercourse is going to be the same thing as internal examination. If the husband finds blood on his body, that blood is internal examination. That's going to be considered dam nidah. That means even if he finds a little bit of blood, it's a problem because that's dam nidah midaraisa. We're concerned that covered over the hardasha. Similarly, even if she finds it in her body, but it was possibly right during intercourse, that's going to still be a problem of nida min atara. We're concerned the feeling of the sensation of intercourse covered over the hardasha, which made her into a real nida. What's the solution, of course? anything involved in intercourse should not be looked at. If he wants to wash off his body without looking, if she wants to wash off her body, don't look. He wants to use a cloth to clean himself, either use something which is disposable and then throw it out without looking, or use something which is going to be washed, throw it into the hamper without looking. Same thing for her. Don't look. What you don't know can't hurt you. But beware that it could cause problems.
How do you know, even if there was a lot of blood that came out, that she wouldn't necessarily know because it could be like a hard rush? And it could be because of the disease, so she would think that it's blood coming out. I'd say it could have been a lot of blood coming out, and then, you know, he would wash it off and there would be colored sheets, and so and maybe it really shouldn't either, but...
Well, we presume that if it's a lot of blood, you can't miss it. A lot of blood means that she's going to have to put on a pad. There's going to be so much blood, you usually can't ignore it. So if it's something you can't ignore, it's a shiloh. But if usually the cases we're talking about are a small amount of blood, could be because there's a serration or something happened to her and she did bleed a little bit even from the uterus, but it's still not considered nida, then you can ignore it. Most blood, a real period, you can't ignore. It's a lot of blood, and there's no two ways about it. Even if you're trying to keep your eyes closed, she won't be able to do it.
Is there a shear necessary?
Same thing, right. So, yeah, the problem is, though, the Gemara says if he finds it on his body, even an hour later, it doesn't matter. Why? Because it has to come from her. Where else would it come from him? So that's not going to help. For her, yeah. So let's say half an hour later, she's in the bathroom and finds on her knee, she finds blood, that's not a problem. Even though she knew she was with her husband a while ago, that's irrelevant, it's shirvesis. But it's important to realize you can't use the name of shirvesis, because often, when you involve the husband, it's going to be longer because we know it must have come from her. There's one rule Rabbi Willard says, and this is a chumra other svarim have as well, that whenever a woman spots, pragmatically, she should not be with her husband for 24 hours. There's no problem, she's not a nida, she's tahora, and we'll see later that when a woman isn't nida, there's concerns about touching. Those concerns don't exist. The woman's allowed to touch. There's nothing wrong with doing anything else aside from actual sexual intercourse. For 24 hours after a woman spots, what's the reason? The reason is that it's strange. When a woman spots, we're not sure what's going on. And if a woman would be spotting and all of a sudden be with her husband during the next 24 hours, what could happen to that spotting? It could become real nidus. Alternatively, the spotting could be forecasting that nidus is happening, and therefore when she was with her husband, she's going to be a real nida. One of the worst things that could happen is for her husband to be with his wife when she's a nida. Therefore, we say, if a woman spots and she doesn't know what's going on, for the next 24 hours, she should not be with her husband. Again, no other hakatos, none of the other chumras that we'll talk about in the future, Bezdin Hashem, as far as nida, but she should not be sexually active with her husband because we're not sure why that spotting is happening. And therefore, she's allowed to avoid it. The only thing she should do is to avoid being together with her husband. That's where Will suggests. You should ask the person that you're going to ask shilos to what he thinks about that situation, but it's important things to keep in mind. It's a matter of prudence more than just a matter of halacha. There are other situations that come up throughout a woman's life that are going to render her a nida, even though they're not strictly a period. One of those is birth, childbirth. When a woman gives birth to a child, then she is automatically a nida. And this is true whether she has blood or doesn't have blood. Even if in theory the Gemara calls leida yeveshta, even if there's leida without blood, she has a status of tuma. But nowadays, never happens. Woman always has blood, and therefore she's always considered a nida, both for the leida aspect and for the nida aspect. Woman is always a nida when she gives birth. Often when people have their first child, they're concerned. They know we read in the last week's parsha something about 40 or 80 days, something scary about 40 or 80 days, that we know all of those days women are tamei. It's not true. If you look carefully in the psukim say that for 7 or 14 days a woman is tamei after she gives birth. After that, she has an amnesty period of being tahora. For a boy, she has 7 days of tumah and 33 days that she's tahora. For a girl, she has 14 days of being tamei and 66 days of being tahora. The Gemara says that that amnesty period, those 33 or 66 days, we don't have nowadays. People got too confused about what's going on. And that extra leniency that the Torah gives a woman after she gives birth does not apply. But giving birth is no different than any other situation of nida. That is, when a woman has blood, she gives birth, she has blood, she's going to be considered tamei until she has the seven clean days that we talked about, we'll discuss a little while again, and then Joseph the Mechbah. So giving birth is really no different than any other Nida period. The one thing that's important to keep in mind is that, according to the Torah, a woman who gives birth to a boy is tamei for 7 days automatically. Which means even if there's no blood, she's always tamei for 7 days. Of course, how many days does it take to go to the mikvah? We mentioned it's usually 7 plus 5. So therefore, a woman's always going to be tamei nowadays for more than those 7 days anyway. There's nothing to talk about. So as far as birth nowadays, the minimum amount of days a woman can become tahor after giving birth is 12 days, as we mentioned, any nida. In order to get rid of nida, you need 5 days that we'll revisit soon, and then 7 days. So therefore, when a woman gives birth also, she needs 5 days plus 7 days. What about if she gives birth to a girl? If she gives birth to a girl, then the Torah says, in last week's parasha says Riyah, she's tamei for how many days? 14 days, automatically. And there's a little confusion. The woman, according to the strict halachas of nida, is tamei for 12 days. Yet according to the halachas of birth, she's tamei for 14 days. Therefore, a woman who gives birth to a girl has to wait at least 14 days before going to the mikvah, according to the Torah. Most situations do not have this. Usually it's not nodeo. Usually birth is so traumatic to a woman's system, she's going to bleed for a lot more than 7 days or 14 days. So when do we ever have the one case that it makes a difference if a woman has a boy or a girl? Well, C-section usually there's even more blood. Even though it's not a vaginal delivery, it's going to have a lot more blood. But there's one case, it's an unfortunate case, the woman's not going to miscarriage. If a woman has a miscarriage of a baby who's after 40 days, usually, if we can't determine if it was a boy or a girl, we're machmir that it was a girl, and she's going to need to wait 14 days before she can go to the mikvah. Even though in miscarriage, often she's going to stop bleeding way before that. That's the one situation we say that she has the minimum of 12 days, which are going to have 2 more days added, 14 days to make her into able to know the mikvah to be turned to her. But aside from miscarriage, Rahman al-San, it's important to realize that women often could have many weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, depends on how their system works, of straight bleeding after birth. It's not an abnormal thing. It's important to just realize that's a normal thing. And as far as sexual intercourse are concerned, the standard doctor's orders in America is that husband and wife should not be together for 6 weeks after pregnancy anyway, after giving birth anyway. So it's nothing with halacha, that's something which is just because of medicine. But it's not uncommon for there to be 4 or 5 weeks that a husband and wife are waiting for to go to the mikveh after they give birth. And it's important to realize from a not hilchos nida point of view, but from a hilchos shalom bayis point of view, that it's no secret that during that time, the husband and the wife could have a lot of different moods. The wife could be seriously affected by hormones. She can be up one day, down another day. It's nothing to do with her. Sometimes women can laugh at themselves. They see the period going up and down. Women can have their moods really affected by the fact that their system was so jolted by giving birth to the baby and nursing can really affect the system. You should just know, Bezer Shem, in the right time, be aware of that. And the father also. We live in a day and age that in corporate America, fathers get 6 weeks paternity leave sometime. Because it's also something on the father, even though the father is usually not as prone to hormones. The father can have different moods. It's a very strange dynamic. First it was just husband and wife, now it's going to be with the child. And it changes a lot of things. It's important to be sensitive to yourselves also, to know you might not be yourself during that time, and it's normal. It's an important thing to be aware of, both for the husband and the wife. It's also something to keep in the back of your minds. It's possible whenever a woman starts counting the Zainakim, the 7 clean days, that her body is not totally finished with the blood, and she's going to have some more blood come out. But it's even more prone to happen during the time right after birth. Because there the body is not just stopping to bleed because of a period, the body is healing. And it's possible that when the body is trying to heal itself, if the woman does too much manual labor, or the woman is too active, even though she thought she had 3, 4, 5 clean days, she's going to have to start from the very beginning again. So the etzah is often not to do such manual labor. And it's important to just prime yourself for that, not to be disappointed if it happens, to know that's within the realm of normal. And dam zeh yavor, that will pass as well. What about labor itself? We presume even before birth. The Gemara says when a woman is in labor, that itself can cause a status of nida. Nothing to do with blood. The fact that the uterus is opening could cause a status of nida. There's a major machlokas apostim, even among Rebbeim and Yeshiva, what stage of labor causes nidos. Some think it's when the water breaks, or the very early stages of labor. Others presume it's much, much later. Rabbi Willard often says it's much later in labor. A late stage of labor really causes nida status. For the most part, it's not that relevant, because even though a husband and wife can't touch each other when the woman is in nida, even if you presume like the more machmir opinions that a woman is in nida much earlier when she starts labor, when the water breaks, or much, much earlier, Rav Schechter often points out that it's not right for, let's say a woman's taking a car service to the hospital. So she's having a hard time walking, so you're going to ask the car service driver to be the one to help your wife to the car? Of course not. That's the husband's job anyway. It's halacha and shulchan aruch. The husband's allowed to help the chola. So even though there might be a nida status, until they get to the hospital, it's important for the husband to be helping his wife anyway. But Be'ezer Hashem, in the right time, when it becomes close to your wife's giving birth to your first child, ask the person you have shilos to what they consider the stage of labor that's going to make your nida altogether. Well, that's why the minhag in Klal Yisrael is that husband won't hold his wife's hand during labor. What's during labor when she's
just like helping her into the car and out.
Right. So that's the question. Why do we say that even during labor? Why is she not considered chola and that should be good enough? We'll quote from the other postman that say that no, maybe that's considered, if holding her hand is considered derechiba, and derechiba is a worse situation. We'll talk about that as we talk about the harachatos. If he's just holding her, helping her walk to the car, that's one thing. But holding her hand might be derechiba. What's the proof? Because if the car service guy would help her to the car, she'd make it to the car. Let's say some other guy decides he wants to hold her hand during labor. She'd give him a kick. She's not interested. She wants to hold her husband. That means that they're a chiba, specifically because of her husband. That might be worse. But the halacha is that during labor, when she's already giving birth, that's considered anida. And even a simple situation, we'll talk about the harachatos, husband's not supposed to pass them directly to his wife when she's anida. So let's say she's in the middle of labor, she wants to call someone. So he should put the phone down on the bed. He shouldn't give it to her directly, because once she's in the late stages of labor, she's in nida already. Right. So then, once she's in the hospital, it depends. If there's a nurse there, that's also that can be that's different than let's say just the time of a car service person. Depends on you have to use your head. One thing that's important to keep in mind in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the masterful plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way He made the miracle of childbirth, the uterus becomes, as we mentioned last week, the uterus goes into the cervix. And the cervix is sealed off during the period of pregnancy. It's sealed off with a mucus plug. That stops infection. Nothing can get into the uterus to cause any problems for the baby. And the halacha is that if a woman, often a woman, as she just comes close to labor, is going to discard the mucus plug. It's called a bloody show. That mucus plug, which is mucus in blood, is going to come out of her body. What do you postulate? Is that considered nida or not? So we discussed last week, the only thing that makes a woman nida is blood from the uterus. This bloody show comes from blood which is at the plug, the bottom of the cervix. That's not a uterus. Is she a nida? No. Even though it's blood, it's bright red, she's not a nida. So it's important to know that this exists. And if sometime close to labor a woman starts seeing blood, ask her shiloh. You can't postulate yourself if it's a bloody show or not, but it's important to know that you can ask a Rav, because often what you think is blood might indeed be blood, but it's still irrelevant. In today's day and age, we're not really that concerned about doctor's visits. In theory, a doctor could make a woman to a nida. If a doctor inserts something into the uterus and scrapes off some of the uterus and takes it out, she's going to become a nida. He takes off some of the lining. But in most situations, the most common OBGYN procedure done is called the pap smear. Pap smear is to check for cervical cancer. Since it's a check for cervical cancer, there are some blood cells taken from the beginning of the cervix. Is she anida then? Usually not. So it's important whenever you go to the doctor for an invasive procedure to ask what's going on. But in most situations today and age, nothing happens because it's really going to be something which is external. And even in the case that it's internal, usually nowadays doctors use things that are so small, they're very seldom going to cause problems. But it's important to be, as Sisem says, an educated consumer is their best customer. It's important to be educated to know what's going on whenever you go to the doctor. A very difficult part of Hilchos Nida is the fact that throughout engagement, a chasen and kala go through a difficult period. It's no secret. Chasen and kala, as much as a person finds it easier to be shomer nidia during the time that chasen kala, during the time that they are dating or they're interacting with people from the opposite gender. Once you're engaged and you know that the only thing that stands between you becoming husband and wife is time, it's very hard to restrain yourself. That's a normal way Hashem made people. And imagine after all that, finally you get married, and after the chasana, when the husband and wife are allowed to touch each other, be affectionate to each other, right after that, they still have to have a restriction. What's that restriction? The halacha is that midi rabbanan, as soon as husband and wife are together for the first time, after the first sexual act, the woman becomes a nida midi rabbanan. Why? We mentioned in the very beginning of the first class that there's another part of the woman's anatomy that we didn't really focus on, because it's only relevant one time in her life, the hymen. The hymen is a very thin flap of skin that's near the very opening of the vagina. And during the first sexual act, that's perforated and usually bleeds. That blood, although according to the Torah, is that considered damnida? Obviously not. It's way, way far away from the cervix, from the uterus. Midrabana is still considered damnida. And therefore, she's going to be considered a nida midrabana. Now, it's important to acknowledge it is something which some chasanim and kalos find difficult. That's normal. You're waiting all this time in anticipation to touch each other, and after the first night together, then everything goes back to the way it was before engagement. They can't touch each other. Rabbi Soloveitchik has an article called Catharsis, in which he suggests perhaps that herein lies the heroism of the Jewish people. How heroism means when you're waiting for something so long and you're willing to withdraw, to say, that's it, you're right, that's true, because halacha says it, I'm going to withdraw. It's a very halachic way of looking at it. Others say psychologically it's very healthy to be slowly and gradually introduced into marriage. And the very fact that husband and wife can be together, but then they have to stop and work on communication and then wait a little while before they can become permitted again, is psychologically healthy. Whether you like the rubs you sow that shows heroism, whether you feel comfortable with the psychological idea, it's still important to acknowledge you're allowed to feel that it's hard. It's nothing than ahalachit to feel that it's hard, and it's normal. You can feel it's hard. Nevertheless, that's the halacha. They point out that in America, Rav Moshe Feinstein pointed out that in the previous generation, when people came to America two generations ago, they said, those who said, Shver Tzayin Yid, it's very hard to be a Jew, ended up with their kids not being religious. And those that said, yes, I'm a Jew, they could have the same difficult life being a Jew, but say, this is the beauty of being a Jew, Baruch Hashem, that was passed on to their children. And it's important to realize there's nothing wrong with saying, this is hard. Yes, it's hard to fast in Yom Kippur for 24 hours. That's true, 25 hours. It's hard to say that I can't get a certain job because I want to keep Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with saying it's hard. But sometimes the tzudan, as they say, the attitude, the approach that you're right, it's hard, I can deal with it. That's part of the beauty of Judaism, is a very healthy attitude. But I think it's important for people to realize you're allowed to feel that it's hard. You shouldn't feel ashamed to feel that any part of need is hard. That's a very normal feeling. But the halacha is that during that initial sexual act, the woman becomes a nida, but there's one of two variables we need. It's either if there's complete penetration of the husband, completely penetrated, and it sounds funny, what do you mean complete penetration? We'll talk about it a little bit more, Bezer Hashem. It's not as easy as it sounds, because when people are not involved in sexual activity, it's very hard to really realize what's going on. You know, the world makes it seem like it's something which is fun and games, which is, as we discussed last week, very unfortunate. It's something which it's a learned art. And therefore, it's possible for the chasen not necessarily to completely penetrate the kala the first time. And if there's no complete penetration, she's not going to be considered a nida. Secondly, if there is even a little penetration, but there's blood, then she's still a nida. So either complete penetration without blood, or blood even without complete penetration. Now, academically, it's very easy to write those two things down, to understand those two things, but often when you're involved in it, it's hard to know what's going on, which is why you shouldn't be embarrassed. We mentioned what's the most important you saw in Ochel Chasnida? Three words, Aseil Charav, find the Rav. The Rav that you feel comfortable talking, you should even feel comfortable talking to the night of the Chasana, the night after the Chasana, the day after the Chasana, ask them, this is what I felt, what do you think the status is? That's a very normal thing that happens, many Chasanim do that. It's not a strange thing at all. So it's important for you to know the facts, either complete penetration or for her to be bleeding, but the implementation of that is not as easy as it sounds. It's just important to keep those two things in mind.
What if there's no hymen?
If there's no hymen, she's not considered neither. If a woman is sexually active beforehand, then even though we frown upon that, but that she's not going to have the tchum of dam pesulim.
Yes,
right. So if there's no, so it depends. But you have to have no hymen completely, because even if there's a little bit of hymen, which usually if she goes horseback riding, there could be the hymen should be perforated. That's not enough. In fact, it's funny. Those that want to say chesubas, the Gemara talks about parent Elanira's talk about the besula when she's 12 years old has dam pesulim. That's true when she's 12. But as a woman matures in general, the hymen toughens and there's less blood in general. The hymen can break a little bit. So it's not unheard of for a woman not to have blood at all, even though she's never sexually active. She's Yisrael Kadoshim. And she didn't do anything which might perforate the hymen. Nevertheless, if she has some hymen, that's still a problem. If she had the whole hymen surgically removed, the postum right, then she's not considered an either. But if there's even a little bit, that's the Lechumra of Zambasul.
Does the woman know?
Usually she doesn't know, unless she goes to an OBGYN to check. She's not going to know what's going on. Usually not. But it's important, that's an important thing for a Kala to speak to her Kala teacher about. Often my wife, this is beyond the store of our discussion, my wife often suggests to Kalas that sometime before their wedding, they use different sized tampons. Often, as we'll discuss in the last class, Bezin Hashem, the vaginal muscles can be very tight. And it's important for a woman sometimes to use tampons, even though women don't usually use tampons before they're married, because tampons, usually, since the hymen is there, tampons can't penetrate. In order to absorb, tampons usually used to absorb menstrual blood, but usually can't penetrate. Nevertheless, if she can, it's kedai to use different sized tampons in order to just loosen the vaginal muscles. It's a kedai thing to keep in mind for talas teachers to tell talas. But often, talas are not going to know what's going on. And in fact, in some situations, during Shev Brachos, they could realize it's a very tough thing. What's going on? The husband can't penetrate. And they have to go to an OBGYN and they find the hymen is too thick, has to be surgically removed. That's not normal. That doesn't usually happen, but it's not beyond the course of the normal situation. There could be much more simple reasons we'll talk about in the future, is why it is that they're not able to consummate the marriage. But that is one thing which is not totally unheard of.
Are we going to come back to that at the end, the practical?
Yes, we'll talk about that later. Let's talk about that at the end. That's why we're not discussing that much now.
Yeah.
Usually, in today's day and age, there are two different schools of thought among women. Some women use pills or some other medication to artificially predict when they're going to become a nida in order to make them not a nida during the night of the wedding, and others just plan their wedding accordingly. But either way, usually, soon after a woman has dam besulim, she becomes a full-blown nida. So that's good and that's bad. It's good because instead of having to have the week plus time of being a nida after dam besulim and then being together very quickly, then having a nida again, she kills two birds with one stone. 2 days after her wedding, she becomes a nida anyway. So she has 2 weeks that she's off, then she goes back and she's going to go to the mikvah for one time and gives her a long time to be with her husband. But it's annoying because instead of being the bare minimum of dam besulim, it's going to be a little bit longer. But that's the normal situation. Woman usually has dam besulim. A day or two later, she becomes a nida anyway, and she has to wait the whole nida period before everything can become back to normal. One thing that's important to keep in mind, although it's not usually nodeya, is that we mentioned that usually you need 7 days plus 5 days to get rid of nida status. For dam besulim, you need 7 days plus 4 days. That usually makes no difference. Why does it make no difference? Because usually you have nida period which goes right into it, so it's going to be more than that. But in theory, it's important to know it's only 7 days plus 4 days. There is a situation that Aruch HaShulchan says happens all the time, which is that even though the husband and wife are together the first time, the initial sexual act, the hymen is perforated, there's still some of the hymen that's left, which means the next time they're together, they're going to have dam besulim again. And then it could happen even a third time. Now, it's important to keep that in mind. It's not a crazy thing to happen. The Aruch HaShulchan says, davar badach menus, it happens all the time. That's how marriage starts, slowly, slowly, slowly. But there's one trick. The one trick is, as a word quotes from Rav Adi Yosef and other postmen that say, that the Chazal mandate, Midrabanan, only one time a woman has to check or be aware of the fact that she's a besula, the dam besula. She never needs to check. But the night of the wedding, the first time they're together, then she needs to be aware if she's bleeding or not. Again, not check, but she should be aware. She doesn't need to check the magnifying glass and see, did I bleed or not? But she needs to be, in general, conscious of blood. But when she comes back to the mikvah, that first time, and the husband and wife will be together the second time, ever, even though it's possible for it to bleed, we invoke the "what I don't know can't hurt me" rule. Don't ask, don't tell, there's no need to know. So, the first time, it's dam besulim, and you can't ignore it. But the second time, the third time, even though it's there, you can ignore it. So why is Aruch HaShulchan so important? First of all, to know that if you don't ignore it by mistake, just know it's not a crazy thing. It's a normal thing to happen. But number two, be extra careful. That when you have the first time after your chasa, your kawan and wife comes back from the mikvah, you should be aware of the fact that she might still have a hymen and be extra careful not to look during or after intercourse because you might have an experience of blood. Biologically, what you don't know can hurt you. Avoid.
The next morning,
she saw
some blood, it wouldn't matter.
Is that 6 seconds? Yeah, but it depends where she sees it, right? If she sees it, let's say, in theory, on just in the bathroom in the toilet seat, you're right. But if she sees it, let's say, on something that she used to clean herself after intercourse, that's a problem. So you still have to be careful. Try not to look at anything.
And what if
it's
white? That would be a problem.
But
avoid white.
Right. So, but white only is going to help, or not white, is going to only help if you don't use it to wipe yourself. But intercourse, we said, gets rid of all the coolers, so it's not going to help. Anyways, even if you use something which is colored, if she is lying on sheets and the next morning finds blood, that's fine. We presume that it didn't come last night. Maybe it just came now. That's okay. So you're right. You should always use colored sheets. As we mentioned, always, everything in the bathroom should be colored. Towels, robes, pajamas, bed sheets should all be colored because there's nothing to lose and all to gain.
So even if she finds, let's say she does laundry a week later,
right. We presume, unless she knows she used it to wipe herself, it might be a shiloh, but right, we presume usually things come from now or come, there's no reason to presume they came at a time of problem.
Well, let's say she knows that this is a cloth that she used a week later if she does laundry.
It's a shiloh. Usually we still presume that it's okay, but it's better to avoid that. She should try. No reason.
Right.
But usually that's usually going to be okay because we presume that it could have come some other time. But if she used it during intercourse and then she threw it in the laundry, it's hard to say that restaurants are going to be a nida for a week. But better to avoid. Avoid. Doesn't hurt to. Right. After a woman becomes a nida, whether it's the situation of nida midaraisa, nida midrabanan, or the additional nida situations that we discussed, she has to remove that nida status. How does she remove that nida status? Two parts. Number one is called hefsaktara, the break of purity, literally. And number two is zayinakim, the seven clean days. We mentioned those briefly. Hefsaktara means that when a woman wants to count 7 days that she does not have blood, she needs to first prove to herself and prove halachically that the blood stopped flowing. How does she prove that? By doing a bedika. This is what we call the super bedika. Hefsaktara is the super bedika, and that proves the blood stopped. Before she does the bedika, she has to wait 5 days in order to allow herself to do that hefsaktara, that bedika, that checking. When we talk about bedika, we mean a woman takes a small piece of cloth, usually you buy it at the mikvah. In theory, she could use her husband's undershirt, torn into shreds if she wants also. That's Rabbi Breichholz says that's the easiest thing to use. But often they sell these bedika cloths at the mikvah, and she has to check herself, do an internal examination in the vaginal canal, and make sure there's no blood. That is on day 5 when she started. Why is that? So the halacha is, in theory, according to the strict letter of the law, if a woman has blood, let's say a little bit of blood today, let's say tonight, she has blood, tonight, according to the halacha, is Wednesday night, Tuesday night is already Wednesday, then tomorrow, as long as she's not bleeding tomorrow, something before sunset, she can do a hefsaktara. Nevertheless, the halacha is that Chazal added 5 days before she does the hefsaktara. And the reason for that, simply stated, is that we know that after 5 days she has to count Zainakim, 7 clean days. The halacha is that if a woman ever has a seminal emission during any of those 7 days, that day doesn't count. Meaning, if a woman is with her husband, and then, let's say, she has semen come out of her body, the day that she has the semen come out of her body doesn't count as one of the Zainakim. In order to make, and we presume the semen is usually viable for 72 hours, and the Gemara says the way to stretch 72 hours, the best way is over 5 days. So halachically, as an added precaution, we presume that a woman cannot start counting her 7 clean days before at least 5 days elapsed. That was just a brief simplification of the idea, even if you didn't get the exact points. L'maisa, the halacha is that a woman needs to wait 5 days before counting the 7 days. Which means, let's say the woman saw blood today. Today was the day she saw. Today is Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, or 5 days. The first day she can do the Hefsek Tara is going to be Sunday. Now, in theory, if she wants to have Sotara earlier, she can do it on Shabbos, but the first day it can pay to do it. It's not going to help unless she does it Sunday. So she can do it, again, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. That's day five. Day five, she doesn't have Sotara. And the next 7 days are going to be her seven clean days. So she saw blood today. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. On day five, she can do her Hefsek Tara. But that is considered day zero of her seven clean days. So she needs seven more clean days, which means she's going to need, again, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. She's going to have, what are her clean days? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. And then, a woman goes to the mikveh the night after the seven clean days are finished. So just to review again, she started seeing, let's say, Wednesday. She could see, in theory, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. It's irrelevant. Or just Wednesday. She still has 5 days. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday are 5 days. Then she has the seven clean days, which are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. And then Sunday night, she goes to the mikveh. And the rule of thumb always is that whatever day her Hefsek Tara is, in this case, when was the Hefsek Tara? What day of the week? It was Sunday. So a week later, at night, she'll go to the mikveh. So if her Hefsek Tara is Sunday, next Sunday night, she's going to go to the mikveh. That's always the rule. So then let's just review that point. Wednesday was the day she started seeing. So she can't do Hefsek Tara before 5 days. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. Hefsek Tara will only count if it's done from Sunday and on. Hefsek Tara is day zero, though. It's important to realize Hefsek Tara does not count at all for the counting of 7 days. She counts the next day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday is seven clean days. And the night of the 8th, she goes to the mikveh, the next Sunday night. Which is why, again, the Hefsek Tara is always done on a day. That day, a week later, at night, is the day she goes to the mikveh. It's important to realize, again, that Hefsek Tara doesn't count towards Zayin HaTim. People often confuse them. Hefsek Tara is day zero. Hefsek Tara just proves that the blood stopped. Then she counts Zayin HaTim, and then she goes to the mikveh after all Zayin HaTim are over. Everyone clear? Yeah, for sure. For sure. Friday night's included. Every night, the only two nights we say are not included are Yom Kippur, and, well, Yom Kippur and Lel Tisha B'Av. But otherwise, for sure, any other night of the year.
So it's possible an hour difference between Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday night
is considered that? Yes, 100%. Exactly. Half an hour. 10 minutes. Yes. Big difference. That's the basic outline.
Which month you go by?
Depends. Usually it's based upon Shkia. You know, once Shkia is over, then it's not going to count. In fact, often this happens, every so often you get a shy like this. 2 minutes after Shkia, a woman calls and says, I didn't have Sotara. I looked at my Verizon cell phone, I saw it was at Shkia. And I realized, oh, I didn't do it. My B'dita, I went into the bathroom, I think my rabbi came out 2 minutes after Shkia. Is that good enough? So it depends who you ask. Chassidish Apostle will say, of course, 2 minutes, what's 2 minutes? That's a minute, 20 minutes after Shkia. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting truth. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, a few minutes after Shkia still counts for Hefsek Tara. It's Rav Moshe Feinstein. Many pass them that way. In our yeshiva, the Amunim of Psach, the Psach that Arabayim have in our yeshiva, is no way. Shkia or bust. After Shkia, you have to wait. Hefsek Tara counts, just counts for the next day. So let's say this woman was supposed to do Hefsek Tara, her earliest day was Sunday. She did it Sunday 2 minutes after Shkia. It was a good Hefsek Tara, it just counted for Monday. She didn't make Sunday as day zero. She has to make Monday day zero, and then she had, you know, everything's going to be a day off. You do it on the fifth day, right.
Any time on the fifth
day. Right, meaning the fifth, yeah. Hefsek Tara ideally should be towards the afternoon, but it could be in the morning. As a rule of thumb, usually when you deal with a real period, most periods will not stop before the beginning of the fifth day. So usually, pragmatically, it can't be done until sometime at the end of the fifth day. And halacha is it supposed to be done usually closer to Shkia. There's a certain rav I know that tells people they should always do two Hefsek Taras, one in the morning, and then one in the afternoon. This way, if you forget the afternoon one, you have one in the morning to rely on. Usually it doesn't help, because usually the morning she's still bleeding. But in theory that could help. But the Eved, the morning is okay. But ideally you presume that it's supposed to be sometime after Mincha, sometime towards the late afternoon.
The clock is clean?
Yes, totally clean.
Is
there
any good about the way to do it the next day?
Well, you have always asked. Always asked. Just what you consider blood is not necessarily blood. But yes, if it would be blood that the Rav would say is a problem, then everything that day doesn't count.
Can you
keep
every hour?
Yes, not only every hour. Peshatara, we presume, you can keep on going and going and going. You're allowed to keep on, as the clock is ticking, as it stands close to Shtiyah, you can keep on going and going, because this is not to prove that this day was clean, it's just to prove that she stopped seeing blood. So she's allowed to stop. Usually, I tell people that you can't keep on going and going and going every second, that's ridiculous. Even if she's gushing blood, she'll stop for a second. So you have to use your head, wait maybe a few seconds, but once she waits a little while, if you can, wait 2 minutes at least. But even if not, if it's really at the buzzer, you don't have 2 minutes to wait. As long as she doesn't do it consecutively, mamish, she can keep on doing the bedichos to have satara, for sure. In fact, pragmatically, this is again more of a kala thing to discuss. There's something called a douche. A douche is usually used in order for women to clean out the vaginal canal, either after sexual intercourse or something else in general that she needs to clean herself out for, but it's very helpful. Because often the reason a woman's going to have a problem doing Hefzatara on day 5 is not because there's any new blood, but because there's residual blood. That residual blood she should clean out. Either take a bath, take a shower, or use a douche to clean it out. And then it's going to be okay. Rav Moshe Feinstein, though, writes that if she douches or she takes a bath, she can't take a bath and then go do Hefzatara right away. That's ridiculous. She could have been gushing blood and she just washed it all away. So Rav Moshe says you have to wait 15 minutes, half an hour. You have to wait some sort of time, the more the better, in order to prove that there's no blood. But it's an important thing to keep in your arsenal, just pragmatically. A douche or a bath is a very important thing to do during the day of Hefsek Tara if a woman cannot do Hefsek Tara. And the minhag is also that a woman is supposed to, before the Hefsek Tara, wash around the vaginal area. That really is something which is in order to help her, to make sure there's no blood left. If she doesn't wash, it's not going to be a problem, because it's to help her. But that's usually the minhag is a woman's supposed to wash in order to just prove, in order to make sure that she has no other blood that might be left earlier, in order to mess up her Hefsek Tara. Hefsek Tara, according to the Shulchan Aruch, ideally should have two parts. Number one is the bedika, the cloth, in order to prove that she is clean. And then what's called moch dochuk. Moch means literally cotton, dochuk means pushed, under pressure. Which means that she is supposed to put a moch dochut, cotton, or a bedita cloth, is what many people use, in the vaginal canal, kol ben ashmashos, the entire time from the end of day 5 and the beginning of day 1 of Zainatim. Which means, let's say, Shtia nowadays is around 7:20. So let's say she did her Hefsek Tara at 7 o'clock, came out clean. At 7:15 she should put a moch into her body and wait for until the sun sets, till it's nightfall, to prove that she is totally clean, and the time between the Hefsek Tara and the day 1 of Zainatim was totally without seeing any blood. Some say you have to wait 72 minutes. If you hold that 72 minutes is the amount of time you wait till for Shabbos, some say you have to wait 72 minutes for that. Others say much, much, much less. Rabbi Willard often says we presume 20 minutes, much less time. And 72 minutes, in my experience, is a very bad thing for a person to do, because if you imagine, putting a bedita cloth into the vaginal canal could cause irritation. Not only that, Ray Willard tells people he thinks there's no reason to do moch dochuk bezman hazeh. He thinks you should not do moch dochuk at all. It's a complicated halachic reason he thinks not to do it. He thinks it doesn't really help. So even though in Shulchan Aruch it says chatchila do moch dochuk, Ramayis Ray Willard thinks there's no reason to do moch dochuk. Don't do it.
Sorry?
Many people use tampons. Yes. The problem is though, a tampon is going to help when the vaginal canal is moisture. But if there's no moisture, it can irritate. And often, based upon the times of the month, the time right after the period, there should be the least moisture, which Shesu can still irritate. So, we presume tampons would work for Moch Tochuk. Rav Willard suggests, don't do Moch Tochuk. You don't necessarily pass like Rav Willard. Whoever you ask your shiloh to, ask that important shiloh to. What I usually tell people is they should not do Moch Tochuk for the beginning of marriage, because it's hard getting used to all these halachos anyway. Don't add this monkey wrench in. If later on they want to take it on, that's fine. But don't do it in the beginning of marriage, because it can only cause complications with very little benefit.
So what is it?
Well, it's not only second check, it causes the status from the day of zero to the Zainatim to start with a Chespes Tara. But it's a check, but you have to leave it in for a prolonged period of time. So it can really cause irritation. So again, I would advise don't do it for the first year. If you want to take it on later, you can. Rav Willard says never. Others say always. It's important to know. Ask your shayla whoever asks your shayla to. Then we have the Bedichos of the Zainatim. The Zainatim, the 7 clean days, are considered clean only if bedikah is done during those days. It doesn't mean she has no blood that's coming out of her vagina. It means that there's actual bedikah, with the bedikah cloth done every day of those 7 clean days to prove that she is not bleeding. L'chatchila, according to the Shulchan Aruch, she's supposed to check twice every day. B'di'eved, once every day is good enough. And Rav Wilk suggests, he thinks, that nowadays that's l'chatchila. There's no reason for a woman to do anything more than once every day. It's also, again, an important thing to ask your Rav. And that also depends on a woman's sensitivity. Some people can do two bedikas every day, there's nothing wrong. But other women find it very hard to do bedikah, more than one bedikah every day, because with the reduction in vaginal moisture, it's going to be hard to do. It's an important thing to ask your Rav, one or two every day. There's no Rav Wilk thinks one every day is l'chatchila. The bare minimum, the Shulchan Aruch says, the bare minimum for a woman to do is 1 in 7. If a woman does 1 in 7, forgets the other ones in between, she's still okay b'di'eved. That's not l'chatchila, that's b'di'eved. We don't advise that. There was the famous Man Orthodox Kula of years ago, is that only do 1 in 7. But even when you do 1 in 7, even if a person's in a situation, we would say, let's say if a woman had some sort of procedure, and if she would do every day of the 7, it would hurt her, then she should only do 1 in 7. But we would not recommend it a priori. It's b'di'eved. Why would we do things b'di'eved? But it's important to realize that even if a woman is doing only 1 in 7, 1 in 7 is in principle, but it's a very silly thing to do to only do 1 in 7. Because since 1 in 7 is the bare minimum, if a woman does more than anything bigger than 1 in 7, she's in trouble. Let's say she does 1, she forgets day 7 and does day 8. Does that count? No. Day 8, what she's calling day 8, is back to day 1 again, which means she just lost an entire week. Since that happens, even if a woman's doing only day 1 and 7, she should always do at least day 1, 3 and 7, or day 1, 2 and 7. Because then, let's think what happens. Let's say you do day 1, 2 and 7, and then she forgets to do day 7. What can happen? What she is going to call day 8 can be her new 7, because she did 1, 2 and 7. So now, day 1 we forget about, but day 2 is day 1, and day 8 is day 7. Or often let's say 1 if it's going to irritate her, do 2 in a day, 2 into second days, do at least 1, 3, and 7. Then 1, 3, and 7, she forgets day 7, 3 becomes 1, and 9 is 7. She only lost 2 days. But if she does 1 and forgets 7, she's up the creek without a paddle. She's going to be losing an entire week. Therefore, again, you should not do 1 and 7, or 1, 2, or 1, 3, and 7, without a Rav telling you that's a specific reason to do it. It's a b'di'eved. But even within the b'di'eved, never do 1 and 7, always make sure to do 1 plus something. And 7 as a safety net. But the bare minimum is that we say chachilah 2 every day, and according to my will, even 1 every day is going to be enough to have zaynatiyah. And most shilas and nida come up during this time. Not all, but most shilas come up during these bedikos. Are these bedikos good or not? And here I cannot emphasize enough, not only is the rule say l'charav, ask, because you're going to see what you consider red is not red at all. We presume brown is mutter, red is usser. What you think is red, very often is brown. That there's a certain story with a Rav, Chassidus Rav. We know the Chassidim in general are very makel as far as Maros. They happen to be, they have Masaros, they're more makel than Maros than even some other people. And there's a story with Chassidus Apostolic, who was once driving, and he went through the red light. And the officer pulled him over and said, "You went through the light?" He said, "Red? Oh, so that's not red." So because they have their powers, what you think is red is not really red. So I think that's a little bit pushing it. But it's an important, very, very important thing. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be scared. Ask. Worse than the story coming out is that it's us or like you thought anyway. And you can gain tremendously and lose very little. Ask. Not only that, the halacha is that the minhag is a woman's supposed to also wear white undergarments during those zaynatiyim to monitor what's going on. So often, most shilas consist of either bedikos during the zaynatiyim, or the white undergarments during the zaynatiyim, because the white undergarments also, she can somehow spot during those zaynatiyim, and if she spots, what's the halacha of that spotting? It's considered a kesem. You can be metal. But often, let's say it's on white, so you don't have the leniency of the fact that it's black or dark, and you have to know, sometimes it could be bigger than a certain size. The rav has the pashtun, is that considered brown or red? And there also, don't be embarrassed, even though sometimes some people feel awkward, it's underwear. Rabbanim are so used to this, it's nothing, and it's important to feel very comfortable. Ask.
What happens if you go out of the
For sure, that happens. So if she sees blood, officially, if it's really blood, she has to start over again. So usually day three will become day zero. Later on, day three is day zero, so she has to have Sephtira. She should usually do that. If she has day three, there's still enough time to do a B'difa afterwards to make it back into day zero. And the next day will be day one again. That's usually the way it works. If let's say a woman during day three of Zainakim sees blood, then she's going to have to start over again. But she should always make sure... Shivinatim. So she has to make and have Sephtara, because she not have Sephtara, so she did because she now had blood again. She should do day three after if she sees blood, or even if she thinks it's blood, if she can't reach a rav in time, often it's because I do a bedika anyway. And if that bedika was a problem, she did a new bedika later, which means that this day three was now at least day zero, next day will be day one. If it turns out that it was good, then everything's fine. So it's important to realize that if day three was bloody or day four was bloody, then she does the Hef Sephtara again later after that. That'll be day zero, and she'll start Zayin Hakim again after that time.
So day five would be, if it's day four, she sees bloods, then day five would be officially day one.
Correct, exactly. But she still needs to have Sephtara beforehand.
Let's say she does go to Diko later on day five.
And?
Clean. So could that be day one also? Or?
No, let's say she saw it on day four.
Then she sees blood, and then she does bedika later on.
So what happens that day four becomes day zero? Because once she sees blood, it can't be a day of Zainakim. You have to start to have Sotara first again. She has day zero, then she's going to have...
Even if it's clean later on day four...
It's not Sotara. She needs to be clean to have Sotara in order to make five into day one.